Welcome to Live, Eat, and Age Well. I'm Bob Blancato, your host, Executive Director of the National Association of Nutrition and Aging Service Programs, and National Coordinator of the Defeat Malnutrition Today, where our goal in both groups is to expand possibilities for serving older adults through the Older Americans Act Nutrition Program. Whether you are working at a state unit on aging, an area agency on aging, a local service provider, or even a program participant, or you're just curious about keeping current about how the senior nutrition program can continue to modernize to meet the needs of current and future generations of older adults, I'd like to thank you for taking time out of your busy day to join us in a conversation with Shauna Marceau, a leader in the Senior Nutrition Program Network's mission to reduce older adult malnutrition. Today, I'm delighted to be talking to Shauna, who is the Chief Strategy and Impact Officer of Meals on Wheels of Central Texas. She is a dietitian who has published research demonstrating the positive nutritional and socialization aspects of the impacts of the nutrition program on older adults. Shauna is also participating in an exciting Administration for Community Living Innovations in Nutrition grant headed by Texas State University, which is developing an app-based system to reduce older adult food insecurity and malnutrition. And please check out Shauna's highly rated Nutrition and Aging Resource Center webinar called Placing the Value in Evaluation, Practical Tips for Measuring Impact, which you can find on the Resource Center's website. Just look for the section called Program Evaluation, and you'll find it there. But before we get started, I'd like to thank the Nutrition and Aging Resource Center for supporting this podcast, and many thanks to their funder, the Administration for Community Living, or ACL. And to let you know, which we have to do, Shauna, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast reflect solely those of the host and our guest. They do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of ACL or the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. If you're not already familiar with the Nutrition and Aging Resource Center, its purpose is to build the capacity of senior nutrition programs funded by the Older Americans Act to provide high-quality, person-centered services and to assist ACL and stakeholders with identifying opportunities to enhance program sustainability and resiliency. The Nutrition and Aging Resource website is at acl.gov/senior-nutrition. And we will be mentioning that website again throughout this podcast. So stay tuned to hear about how this valuable website and resource center can be a key to your senior nutrition program's success. So let's get to our guest today. Shauna, as the Chief Executive and Impact Officer for Meals on Wheels of Central Texas, she brings over 15 years of experience in the public health nonprofit sector, specifically working with older adults and neighbors with disabilities in Central Texas. She drives the organization's overall strategy, initiatives, and continuous quality improvement evaluation processes to demonstrate measured impact on both operational and programmatic outcomes. Shauna has a master's degree in human nutrition and is a licensed and registered dietitian nutritionist. She and her colleagues were published in the Journal of Nutrition, Health, and Aging, quote, Impact of Home-Delivered Meals on Nutrition Status Among Older Adults in Central Texas in 2018, and in a journal, Working with Older People, quote, Addressing Loneliness and Isolation Through Client-Volunteer Interactions back in 2021. She has been honored for her commitment to the ideals of scholarship, leadership, and services by the National Society of Collegiate Scholars, and has received awards for innovations in dietetics practice and education by the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, as well as leadership, research, and academic excellence by the School of Family and Consumer Sciences, Nutrition and Foods of Texas State University. My goodness, what an intro. My goodness, what an intro. Shauna,
hi,
really.
Bob.
How are you? Nice to see you.
Oh, good to see you. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for all the work that you do. And, you know, you and I have, you know, looking at the work you were doing about the value of socialization, that continues to be a hugely important issue. A lot of your research went on before that pandemic, and think about it now in the context of what the pandemic did to add to it.
Absolutely.
So, let me ask you to start with, any opening comments you want to make? I should let you have the floor for a minute.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Honored to speak with you all today. So ready to dive in when you are.
Wonderful. So Can you share what led you to focus on older adult malnutrition and how that interest impacted your work at Meals on Wheels?
Yes, so that journey wasn't a journey I saw for myself at first, but in 2008, I started working at Meals on Wheels Central Texas in a different position, but it was over the nutrition segment of it. And that's when the economy took a downward dive that we all remember in 2008. And that's when our program and organization had our first wait list ever. And so at that point, I asked myself, well, how are we going to know who to put on first? You know, this can't just be a first come, first serve. It has to be based on need to some degree, whether it's food insecurity or nutrition status, that being malnutrition or those at risk. And so it kind of just asking that one question kind of set me on this path of kind of looking into what are some validated nutrition screening instruments for older adults, which ones are developed specifically for older adults in mind, and which ones are feasible to implement in the community. And it just, one door opened after another, and I came across a tool that I highly admire and like. It's been a part of our internal operations for a little over a decade now. And that is, you know, one of the ones that is referenced in one of the publications. But that's where it all started. It was literally a situation that happened that was impacting how we could onboard individuals, and I needed an evidence-based way to determine such. And we ended up using that tool for different reasons, but that's really what opened that door.
If I ask, which tool was it that you're talking about?
I'm a fan of the mini nutritional assessment short form.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there is discussion about that, as you know, about different forms and different screening tools. But, you know, the more important thing is that you spotted that early as an element of need and malnutrition, because, again, using a similar journey approach, you know, this Defeat Malnutrition Today coalition grew out of a concern that while we were looking at senior hunger and food insecurity among older adults, which are very important, we were not necessarily focused on malnutrition, which has deeper consequences and seems to be impacting more and more older adults. And so you were really ahead of a lot of people with your interest and your focus.
It felt that way at the time. There wasn't a lot of traction or a lot of buy-in when I was kind of starting on this path. And so now we see it in the reauthorization of the Older Americans Act in 2020. Now you see that that is a purpose, is to prevent malnutrition. So it's very validating and reassuring, but it can be hard to create that kind of change in an organization and environment when it doesn't quite exist yet.
Well, you know, stay tuned, because as you know, we're approaching the next reauthorization, and you know, there has been a lot of interest in that nutrition section, the screening section, and I expect there'll be more as we go along. I love the title the value evaluation. Evaluation can be a hard balance, though given limited resources. Did you encounter any challenges to evaluation in a social services agency?
Oh, absolutely. I didn't really know that that's what I was doing at the time. You know, again, I was like, hey, we can implement this assessment tool. This can really tell us who needs meals first. But I didn't realize that I was on this journey to evaluate fully that impact. You know, the individuals who are the frontline folks that are collecting the information, determining eligibility, those that are doing the home visits, a lot of times they're the individuals that when people want certain things done, things can keep being piled onto their plates and maybe some things not removed. And so working with the, you know, staff that were going to be responsible for implementing and administering the tool, I got a lot of pushback on that. You know, when we think of resources, it's not just people, it's time. Mm-hmm. Well, this is, you know, I got statements of this is going to take X amount of time. We're already spending this much time in the home. You know, the tool that I like uses a measured objective measurement of the calf circumference for older adults. And so a lot of that pushback was about that, having to do that. We are not health professionals. We're not nurses. We shouldn't be doing this. And then assuming that the client or neighbor that we're visiting would not feel comfortable with the assessment, they didn't feel comfortable. So I got a lot of pushback. And I think at the time, there wasn't really a concern across nonprofit organizations of that impact that it's having. It was more for it's the right thing to do. We're doing the right thing. We're giving these meals to individuals where the need is really high. And it wasn't until 2015, the supplemental journal article, like it's a supplement packet that came out of the Journal of Gerontology. And it was the whole supplemental packet was on home delivered meal programs. It was really exciting that all those publications were about our industry. And the author at that time said to about a paper on how home delivered meal programs need to start moving beyond satisfaction surveys. We need to be able to see if we can measure a true change in someone, a true impact. That the funders, no longer is it just, hey, we're just going to fund you because it's doing good in the community. It's turning more into the funder's portfolio of investment to their board. Yes, we want to continue funding Meals on Wheels Central Texas. They are accountable for the funds that we give. Look at the impact they make. And when you can improve malnutrition with and use a validated tool to kind of show that change, you're preventing a whole lot of cost and poor quality of life and a whole gamut of issues in that realm. So, the only way I was able to go around that, because you've got to have buy-in. You've got to have buy-in from staff. You can't implement something and have everybody quit the next day. So I asked for three of the staff, three volunteers of that group. And I just said, just pilot it with me. Let's see how long it takes. Let's time it. How long does it take on average to do this tool? How long does it take to do the one that we're required to do nationally in an older Americans Act program, nutrition program? And we gave them a script, like, why would you measure someone's calf? A really great way to describe why we need to do that. And then we had a comfortability scale, a Likert scale. On a scale of 1 to 5, how comfortable were you measuring that individual's calf? And also asking the individual on the other end, how comfortable were you with me measuring your calf? And it took that pilot. It was about 3 months. There's probably about 40 individuals that were screened this way. And I was able to show that it takes about 2 minutes to do on top of everything else, that all the other things took a lot longer. So this wasn't a big lift in that regard. And the clients were very comfortable. There wasn't any clients that had a problem with that being an anthropometric measure. Again, they're used to that in a clinical setting. And yes, we're in the home, but we are going to become that new clinical setting to some degree. And then the case managers and assessors that were in the home, one of them was just not comfortable with it at all. But by the end of the pilot, she was very comfortable. So I think sometimes change is hard. Sometimes change means we're losing something versus gaining. And sometimes people just need to try it out and see that it's not actually that bad. So after that pilot, we got buy-in across the board to implement across the board.
So when they were, you know, getting involved in doing this, were you explaining to them why? In other words, what's the end result going to be? What's going to be better for you if you go through the screening and evaluation? Yeah. What do you tell them?
Great question. That we at Meals on Wheels Central Texas, we want to learn how their nutritional health is going. And one way that we're able to do this is by asking you these questions, but also measuring your calf circumference. And the reason why we measure your calf muscle is because as we age, if we're not getting the right nutrients that we need, we start to lose muscle. And the first place we start to lose it is in our extremities. And so the calf muscle is one place. And so that helps us have a good gauge of how you're doing nutritionally. So they would administer that at baseline when they're rolling on. And when those that were identified as at risk or malnourished per the tool, my staff flagged them and followed up just 3 months later to go in the home and readminister, see how meal service is going, making sure they're on the right diet, making sure that they have all their needs. You know, it's a really great check-in right after somebody onboards as well. And for several fiscal years in a row, we showed that 2 out of 3 improved in just 3 months. And that was consistent, consistently shown each year.
That's fascinating, because I wasn't familiar with this calf measurement thing. And, you know, one would assume that, you know, if that's involved in the screening, you got to get past a certain person who just doesn't want to be subject their calf to that measurement. You know, they need to understand why. And then I guess if they do, it makes them think differently about, you know, where they were and their health journey and their health habits and eating habits. So that's that's very interesting. I was not aware of that myself. And but then when they begin to see the impact, well, plus I have to also assume that you get in the door because you're a trusted entity. I mean, you know, Meals on Wheels, you know, and people know you, who you are, you're a familiar thing in the community. But going to a degree of, you know, screening and things, that takes another step, I guess, in the whole process.
Yes, and you know, we're very respectful of individuals and how they feel. So it is an option. It's nothing that we force upon anyone. They can decline. The staff member can decline if they don't feel safe or it's not a sanitary condition. So it just, that doesn't happen as often. So
are these, just to clarify for my own benefit, the people that are in that screening that you're doing, are they the people who are in the program or the ones on a waiting list?
In the program right as they start. That's how we use it now.
Okay. And you mentioned a waiting list before, and you said, you know, how do you prioritize who gets on or gets off the waiting list first? Tell us a little bit about that process. I'm curious about that.
Sure. It's not in operation right now because we don't have a wait list, which we're thankful for.
Yes, congratulations.
But we tried a few different things because with our program and with many, I'm sure, there's a phone screening first. And then there's the home visit that does the major assessments to determine eligibility. That phone screening, you're kind of collecting demographic information. You're collecting some things to see, do they seem eligible? So a few knockout questions, do they seem eligible for home delivered meals? And within that, we administer the USDA food security survey. Because if the MNA, you need to be in person. So that's an additional resource if you go out when they're on the wait list. But if you go out at the beginning of the program, that's okay. So the way we would prioritize if we had a wait list today would be a few items, but I think we would be looking at food security more. And USDA's food security is very specific to economic need, which is a huge variable in how individuals end up food insecure. Older adults, however, end up food insecure, not just on based on economic needs, but more mobility, transportation, and access needs. And so there was actually a paper that came out recently, some researchers who were conceptualizing a new food security instrument with the older adult in mind. We will always use USDA because we want to be able to compare with the data sets with Feeding America, right? And the food banks. We want it to, you want your data to be standardized in a way where you're part of the conversation and not this separate population. But we have added things in that are more attributed to food insecurity for older adults. So that's one way. And we would have some other like itemized, like yes or no questions that could help move them to the top of the list. But we ended up moving towards food security for eligibility prioritization. And malnutrition for evaluation, but also additional nutrition consultation in the home. And, you know, how do we prevent unwanted weight loss, things like that. So they're different things.
Yeah. Just for curiosity, how many of the older adults that you deem to be malnourished or suffering from malnutrition even knew they were?
Oh, none of them. No.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because I think too, which a great YouTube video is The Hidden Epidemic, which is malnutrition in older adults. It is a very hidden epidemic because as a society, we often assume that someone who is malnourished or at risk is going to physically look emaciated, muscle wasting. That is not what a malnourished older adult looks like. Not necessarily. Of course, that could be the case, but not necessarily so. A lot of what makes our mobility issues worsen as we age, our immune system worsen as we age, is that loss of lean muscle mass. Because mobility, we need the muscle strength, but your immune system is also your protein stores, and that's how we make immune cells. So when that muscle is lost as we age, it's replaced by other tissue, fat tissue. So you don't see it. And so a lot of people don't know, but they're not, you know, their appetite's going to be poor. They're losing weight. They don't want to. I got a cut on my arm. It's been here a month. It's not healing. Or they get ill and they cannot really bounce back very well. And then all of that just kind of leads to the direction of hospitalization and then, longer stays and then readmittance and then institutionalization, unfortunately. And so if we can be more proactive and go a little more upstream, we can do a whole lot. And our programs are in that vector. We are the upstream solution for older adults at that time in their lives.
And I know I'm going completely off script here, but then I think we're allowed to, is how much of malnutrition is tied to medication adherence or lack of medication adherence or connection to medication?
Quite a bit. There's a lot of physiological factors that we experience naturally that put us at risk. Polypharmacy is one of them, because typically as we age, we do end up with hypertension, some high cholesterol. It only takes three, and that's a polypharmacy situation where those medications can inhibit nutrient absorption, inhibit the utilization of those nutrients. Or sometimes those medications reduce appetite on top of already a reduced appetite, create dry mouth and difficulty swallowing. All these things that lead someone to not be excited about eating anymore. And that lack of appetite and the way food taste changes, that happens naturally as we age. You throw in the medications and it exacerbates the situation. I think we can all think of a loved one that we've had that's over 70 or so that they're just not very hungry and they don't eat very much. And so that's okay, but each bite counts. And that's where the consultation, that's where the education comes into play.
You may remember a book years ago called Bowling Alone. That was a I think it was Robert Putnam was his name. And my question is, how much does eating alone without contribute to malnutrition?
Yeah, eating alone impacts the social emotional part of us and that feeling, that sense of being alone, potentially depression, things like that. And that social isolation piece is just as harming to health physically as it is emotionally and mentally. So the eating alone, you're not as excited to eat. It's not the same as communal bread breaking. That is a big part of everyone's culture, as our culture as humans. We are pack animals. So just by being alone all the time is art setting yourself up both for physiological but also social emotional poor health.
Yeah, and that's why one of the more interesting outgrowths of the pandemic was the virtual meal, the technology involved in the virtual meal, which I think was very helpful to a lot of older adults. And let me shift gears for a second and offer you my congratulations on your work with Texas State University in the new AVA, if I got it right, Innovations in Nutrition ACL grant. Can you tell us a little bit about this project overall and your work specifically?
Absolutely, yes. I'm very excited to not only work on an innovations grant with through ACL, but also to partner with Texas State University again. Nueva is a really neat project. So it's got several layers. I mean, the entire goal is to break down barriers for older adults to access food, meals, maybe even some of it's going to be groceries at some point. Have an asset map in the region that we live in too. So everything's connected so people know where to go to get additional food access, et cetera. Where we are right now with it, which is very exciting because this is very innovative. And when I sat down with the Nuevo folks in the beginning, they are so incredible to work with, but they also understanding we are the community-based organization. What do you all need to make this partnership worth its while? Yes, the app sounds great. The referrals can come in. Yes, they can already be eligible, or yes, we can connect them out. But what is it that our organization needs? And I said, well, I can tell you what the entire industry needs nationally, and some of us have it, and most of us don't, is a secure delivery app so that routes can be delivered digitally. And at the point of delivery, there can be a tracking. There can even be some like a few questions asked to the driver, whether it's a volunteer or paid staff. So you can get little data collection points on how people are doing, ask them about the meal. I mean, it can run the gamut of what we could use that for. And that's really how do we standardize the power of the knock? We hear about the power of the knock, which is our home delivered meal program. It's not these for-profit groups that just drop something on the on the porch, this is somebody you want eyes on the person, you want to check on them, maybe ask a couple of questions, and boom, we can standardize what that safety knock looks like, get that information back into our system securely, and escalate things in a more timely manner, tracking things in a more timely manner with real-time date stamps.
Very, very important, you know, because one of the things, we also work in the field of elder abuse prevention, and, you know, those reports sometimes, when properly filed with the proper agency, you know, can actually help prevent elder abuse or neglect. And, you know, in an advocacy standpoint, you know, one of the things we always try and do, I mean, myself and Nan Aspen and Ellie of MOA, is to talk about, you know, how important the meal is, but also the contact, the safety check, things of that nature. And, you know.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, Bob, because that publication working with older people, that's what that research showed, is there's four non-tangible benefits of home-delivered meal providers. So I'm just going to talk about one as an example. You know, we definitely are going to have volunteers that develop lifelong relationships and rapports with some with some of their clients. But you're also going to have a lot of volunteers that really care, but they're also delivering all their lunch hour. And yes, they're doing the safety check, and yes, they're friendly, but they may not have that. They may not be on a first name basis with each other. And so the big question's always been, well, what, you know, what does that look like? So we did not, it was a random sample. We did not pick media friendly clients, but it was so great to hear it. A couple of them said, you know, I don't know my delivery driver's name, but I know they genuinely care. And when we did like fall risk assessments, those that were at highest risk for falling, like it was a very high percentile, felt so much safer that somebody was coming to the door. So many different data point examples like that, demonstrating that there's major benefits to these programs and they're not always tangible, but that reassurance that somebody's checking on you, somebody will be there in the event that something were to happen, that goes a really long way, can save lives, can do a whole lot for our community.
Sure. And it enhances the volunteer experience because it's just more than delivering a meal. It's contributing to that person's well-being. Well, I have a feeling that we could go on a long time, but they're not going to let us do that. And so I'm going to have to say, I mean, even though it's written down here, I'm going to say it in all honesty, it's been a real honor to talk to you. And I'm loving the work that you've been doing. I think it's great. And we look forward to the results of this innovation grant work because it is so important to connect people the right way to get what they're entitled to. Thank you for giving us examples of how evaluation metrics are key components of providing quality nutrition services as we work to eradicate older adult malnutrition. Thank you so much for your time and your expertise. And I hope maybe we can have another conversation down the road.
So we have
come to the end of today's podcast. And thanks again for joining us. I look forward to more segments talking about older adult malnutrition and many more topics that we hope you will find engaging and helpful in your work. Keep in touch with us and keep abreast of the latest information from experts and your peers by visiting the Nutrition and Aging Resource Center at acl.gov/senior-nutrition and getting on their mailing list. You can submit feedback by pressing Contact Us. If you're from a local agency or area agency on aging, the Resource Center now has interactive connection chats on a regular basis where you can learn from and share with peers as well as subject matter experts. Until next time, keep learning, keep caring, keep promoting healthy seniors. Check back for future Learn, Eat, and Age Well podcast as we continue to bring forward innovative and impactful service ideas and solutions you can use to keep your program vibrant and growing into the future. Thank you again, Sean. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.